It's time for the Ron and Brian podcast. Get ready to fill your ears with the latest news, politics, current events, and whatever else we feel like talking about this week. And now, your hosts, Ron and Brian.
All right, and we are back. Monday. It's time for episode 176 here on the Ron and Brian podcast. I'm Ron, joined by Brian. Brian, how the hell are you today, sir?
Well, I've been banished to my bedroom. So you can already see that that things are not going to go, not off to a smooth start.
How did that happen? How did you get kicked out of your main recording studio?
I've got family visiting me, which means that I have allowed the rest of my home to be filled with the joy and the mirth. Is that the word, mirth?
Mirth is a good word.
Mirth of relatives. So I have accepted that I am in my in the B studio, not the A studio, the B studio. I am here. So as you can see, the lighting is a little different. The background, not as descriptive of who I am. I know you're a big fan of the lamp.
Love the lamp.
So I'm here. Ron, how are you doing, more importantly?
You know what? I am here. I'm ready to do a podcast and ready to have a drink.
Drink of the week.
На здоровье.
Drink of the week.
Sláinte.
Who's?
Drink of the week. Drink of the week.
Brian, even though you have been relegated to the B studio, what did you bring for your A drink this week?
Oh, I went all the way to Norway.
Ooh.
With the Oslo Brewing Company. This is what they're calling Oslove. It is a passion fruit blonde ale, 4.7 ABV. Its appearance is a golden blonde. The aroma is a passion fruit. The flavor, passion fruit, wheat, tartness. The bitterness is light. Most importantly, the temperature is cold.
Give it a sip. That actually sounds pretty good.
And my thirst is now quenched. Actually, quite tasty. It's not heavy. This is going to go down very well. There's a second one right now chilling in my refrigerator, which I will also be enjoying later on this evening. Ron, what do you have?
Well, this week, Brian, you know, one of the things that people love about us is that we are men of the people. People can feel free to reach out to talk to us about different components of the podcast, Drink of the Week being one of them. So I was conversing with a friend of the podcast, Alonzo, the other week. He had tried the Conshohocken Nightmare on East Elm Street beer that I had brought for Drink of the Week a couple weeks back. He was enjoying it. He put me on a recommendation for another pumpkin beer, Brian, as you know, trying to get as many of them in this fall as possible. This is from Spring House Brewing in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. This is their pumpkin ale called Brains. It is pumpkin, a touch of sweet dough, and autumn spices. What I think you're going to like about this, Brian, is it is clocking in at a solid 8.5%.
So that
means come after dark, it's probably going to be a sassy run. It's got a really nice coloring to it, a nice, really nice spicy smell. So let's take a sip here.
I'm hoping that we find out about the night you lost your virginity.
Ooh, that is good. I think even you would like this. You, a man who is not a fan of pumpkin ales.
Now, at what point do you dip your pint glass into a pumpkin spice sugar combination?
I wish you had mentioned that sooner, so I could have prepped that. I could have easily whipped up a cinnamon sugar mix in the kitchen.
Is that what it is? It's a cinnamon sugar, not pumpkin spice.
Probably go with a cinnamon sugar. Would be okay. The pumpkin spice would be too much with the spices in there. But I think the cinnamon sugar would make a nice ring on that.
All right. Very good. Very interesting. I'm glad to see you embracing the basic bitch inside of you.
It's what you got to do sometimes, Brian. It is hashtag basic bitch fall, as I'd often said. I'm going to take another sip of it just to spite you.
Now, I'm actually disappointed that we don't have a pumpkin spice basic bitch bumper. Like, I feel like that's something that you would have done.
I'll have to, I'll get with Matt on that and see if we can work on that. Billy, that's really asking, does it compare to pumpkin? I would still drink pumpkin before this. This is good, but I would still put pumpkin ahead of it.
Ironically, when I was in college, my nickname was Cum King.
Interesting.
So it's so weird that now there's a beer called Pumpkin when I was known for Cum King back in the day. It shows you life is a full circle. It is a wonderful, beautiful thing that, you know, where there is always progress, we always realize that we are simply revisiting where others before us have already treaded.
All right. You know where there isn't progress, Brian? It's in the world of racism.
Fucking racism.
For this week in racism.
This week in
racism.
Racism.
Racism. So we've got another solid 2 pages of racism again this week. Add an 11 font, a little bit larger of a font than last week, but still 2 solid pages. We are going to try and keep this at a tight 10 minutes. So start your clocks. It's This Week in Racism. MLB Network broadcaster Jim Catt came under fire this week for comments he made during a playoff game about Chicago White Sox third baseman Yoan Moncada. With Moncada up at the plate in the first inning, Catt's broadcast partner Buck Showalter praised Moncada's ability and said in jest, "Can we have one of those?" when referring to the first time Showalter saw Moncada play. The 82-year-old Catt responded with, "Get a 40-acre field full of them." Catt apologized for the remark in the fifth inning, calling his choice of words poor and an insensitive and hurtful remark. Las Vegas Raiders coach John Gruden used a racist comment in referring to NFL Players Association executive director DeMaurice Smith in an email 10 years ago, the Wall Street Journal reported on Friday. The email sent to the president of the Washington football team in July 2011, as the NFL and his players were in the midst of trying to resolve a lockout, said Smith had, quote, lips the size of Michelin tires. Gruden told...
Whoa, time out. Pause the clock. Who wrote this email?
John Gruden.
The head of the coach of something, right? The
coach of the Las Vegas Raiders, yes.
That's so fucking bad.
So Gruden told ESPN he did not recall writing the email, but apologized for the fallout. "I'm ashamed I insulted DeSmith," Gruden told ESPN, adding, "I never had a racial thought when I used it."
What?
A North Carolina teacher resigned following outrage over alleged comments she made to black students that they would be her field slaves if it wasn't for the Constitution. A parent of one of the students at Winterville Charter Academy said, quote, she had them raise their hand during a constitutional lesson and reminded them that if it wasn't for the Constitution, they would be her slaves, her field slaves. The school did not identify the teacher, but confirmed that they had accepted her resignation.
Yeah.
Only a few days after a teacher in a Kansas City high school used the N-word during class, the Raytown School District is now investigating a second racial incident that took place last week. High school students in a Raytown English class were provided with a worksheet that contained many racial, misogynistic, and homophobic slurs in it used to teach the Laramie Project. School officials stated that the worksheet was updated earlier this year with a new version that omitted the questionable language, but for some reason, the old version of the worksheet was used. A woman is facing a civil rights violation after allegedly threatening a 9-year-old black boy who was playing in a park with her son in Dover, New Hampshire. The complaint alleges that Christina Graper, 51, threatened the boy and called him racial slurs after he accidentally broke her son's toys. Witnesses also say that she threatened to kneel on his neck, to which she countered that she only said words to the effect of, "You wonder why you guys get expletive kneeled on." Graper faces a maximum civil penalty of $5,000 for civil rights violations.
Wait a second. You can get you can face civil fines for being racist?
apparently in New Hampshire for civil rights violations. Yeah.
Wow. Wow. That's very progressive. Holy cow. I'm okay with that.
All right. A construction company is being accused of discriminating against Black workers and firing two employees after they complained about a hostile workplace, according to a lawsuit filed by the EEOC. The suit, filed on September 30th, alleges that while working on a job site for the Whiting Turner Contracting Company, Black employees were subjected to segregated crews, porta potties covered in graffiti with derogatory phrases like "go back to Africa" and references to the KKK and white power. Whiting Turner did not respond to the EEOC when the agency reached out to talk about solutions during the summer. To celebrate temperatures dipping into the 70s after a sweltering weeks-long heat wave, Arkansas's KATV anchor Chris May and meteorologist Barry Brandt decided to wear Afro wigs on the air. The Little Rock-based station quickly suspended the two white news anchors indefinitely and fired their boss. KATV has since pledged to implement, quote, further training for sensitivity and workplace conduct in line with our commitment to ensuring events like this don't happen again. David Merriman, a 56-year-old owner of rental properties in Virginia, is being sued by Virginia's attorney general in an $8 million housing discrimination lawsuit over his alleged racist and sexist treatment of tenants. Black people who rent from him says he refers to them as the N-word, who should go back to Africa. Merriman allegedly called a white female tenant a N-word lover and said she should pay your bills like other white people. When confronted with claims about a long history of using racist language towards his tenants, Merriman's response was, "I used to date a Black girl." A Black female therapist in Alabama found a noose hanging from a tree at her home after going to her employer with allegations of racism on the job. Takia Lawson McCants said she started experiencing racism as soon as she was hired in 2019 at Alabama Mentor, with a white colleague talking about living in a, quote, sundown town, and that the colleague had a member of her family who hanged Black people who didn't leave town by the time sun sets. The same colleague also said that Black children could be lynched there and that white families who hosted Black people could find a burning cross in their yard. The colleague allegedly used racial epithets, including the N-word, Black bitch, slave, and monkeys when referring to Black people. Lawson McCants has filed a lawsuit and is seeking retribution for humiliation, embarrassment, and mental anguish she claims she experienced. San Diego is paying a former city laborer nearly $100,000 to settle a lawsuit claiming he was discriminated against because of his race and complaints he made about unsafe working conditions. Demetrius Wimberly, a Black man who worked in the city's streets division, was fired for cause after a minor vehicle crash in January of 2018. He said the accident was used as an excuse to fire him in retaliation for his previous complaints about his supervisor's discriminatory conduct. Wimberly accused his Latino supervisor of favoring Latino workers and rarely speaking English to his employees. He also stated he received bad assignments and shifts with no duties that would likely lead to a promotion. And Owen Diaz, a former Black employee who accused Tesla of ignoring racial abuse he experienced while working at the company, was awarded $137 million by a jury for the abuse he endured. Between 2015 and 2016, Diaz worked at Tesla's Fremont, California plant as an elevator operator for about a year. He was repeatedly called racial slurs by his supervisor and coworkers, and also says that his coworkers drew racist symbols and drawings around the plant and that Tesla did little to stop it. And Brian, we've got a few stories in Racism Rewind.
Racism Rewind.
And real estate agent Eric Brown, along with his client Roy Thorne and Thorne's teenage son Samuel, have filed a federal suit stemming from an August incident where Wyoming, Michigan police ordered them out of a house they were touring and placed them in handcuffs. The lawsuit was filed October 1st in the U.S. District Court for Michigan's Western District and lists the city of Wyoming, its police chief, and six officers as defendants. The suit claims the officers violated the rights of Brown and the Thorns and seeks unspecified damages on charges that include unlawful detainment, excessive force, and false imprisonment, among others. Tanner Holt, a Knoxville cop who was knocked out after he allegedly made racist comments to a Black man during a wedding they both attended, has resigned. Holt quit last week, during an internal affairs investigation into his behavior. And Edward Matthews, the Mount Laurel, New Jersey man, captured on video going on a racist rant this summer. You might remember he gave his address and challenged people to come out, and a couple hundred yes. people did. He was charged with bias, intimidation, and harassment this past week. A video captured Matthews' racially charged words against a neighbor on July 2nd, which sparked large protests outside of his home days later. He was arrested on July 5th and is now facing a total of 22 charges. And Brian, that is the week in racism. Jesus. So disgusting. Brian just had to walk away. He just had to walk away because he just couldn't take it anymore. And that's not even everything, Brian. I do trim down the list a little bit.
I just can't even imagine what you left out.
It's
so sad.
Yeah, it was a rough week, to say the least. So let's move on, shall we? Let's try and keep things moving here. I think I kept it as close to 10 minutes as possible, but let's move on.
And I think you did a damn good job of it.
Well, thank you. Let's move on and talk about our beefs of the week.
Brian's beef of the week.
Brian, what's bothering you this week?
Oh, I've got something that I never thought would be a beef of the week.
Interesting. Now I am intrigued, so please tell us.
The world of vintage clothing.
Really? And why is that your problem?
All right. Recently, I was encouraged to watch a YouTube video on the history of vintage clothing and the way it was introduced into society originally as a way for the underclass to obtain clothing that had once belonged to the wealthy. Okay. How over years it has become passé, become hip again. In the modern age, it was primarily driven back into popular age by the Nirvana frontman Kurt Cobain, who would go to vintage secondhand stores and buy flannel shirts and whatnot, and he made it cool to not look like you were made of wealth and whatnot. So I felt like I had been given the crux of what vintage clothing shopping was going to be.
Okay.
As I mentioned earlier, I have family in. I have my two nieces who were very excited about the prospect of going vintage clothing shopping in Manhattan, New York City, the city so nice they named it twice, the city that never sleeps, New York, the concrete jungle, where dreams are made of, where nothing. All right, anyway.
I've got to stop.
Sorry. I figured you were waiting for that.
So I went to one, two, three, four or five vintage clothing shops with my two nieces and was horrified at the junk that is being pawned off on the younger generation under the guise that this is something cool. Like, what I did not realize now is that the whole aesthetic for women in their teens, early 20s, is not to go to the mall and buy new clothes, but to go to a store that sells you clothes that somebody else bought, wore, doesn't want anymore, sold back for a fraction of the price, at which point you then pay, in some cases, just as much as the original item was sold for, so that you can wear something that was in fashion years ago. The amount of junk. Ron, you know how much I do not like waiting online outside of stores.
That is very
true. I do not believe in it. If I have to wait online for a store, I just keep walking. It wasn't meant to be. I waited online to get into something called Beacon's Closet earlier today. Probably, I would say, I waited probably about 10 minutes to get into a store knowing I wouldn't buy anything. I was, in many cases, the only man in these stores, which, by the way, I want to go on record that I did everything I could not to be the creepy old man.
Well, good. Good to hear.
I kept my distance. I refused to make eye contact. I looked down at the ground. And at one point, I looked at another woman when she was going through the leather jackets, and I said, I'm an ally. I feel your struggle.
Which beacons did you go to? Brooklyn, Guernsey, 13th?
I went to, there was one on, I think it was the one on 13th and 6th.
Okay.
Around 13th and 6th. But I did have a very nice brunch right afterwards at something D. Andrea, something along those lines. Had myself a Bloody Mary, which suddenly made the day less painful. Anywho, vintage shopping, a gigantic scam that the teenage girls and the young women have fallen into. Buy new, don't buy used. That is my beef of the week.
All right. I mean, that is, I get it. I understand. I feel your pain.
Ron?
Yes.
What's bothering you?
So I have a very, I guess, maybe kind of unusual beef this week. My beef this week is with drunk Ron.
Whoa!
Sober Ron, hell of a guy. You get him here pretty much each and every Thursday. Even buzzed Ron is enjoying.
Oh, no! I feel like I saw sober Ron, buzzed Ron, and I saw drunk Ron all this past week.
And that is what happened on Thursday night. Brian came down to Pennsylvania, and we went to go see Zane Lamprey live at Broken Goblet Brewing, the late show. Brian came down. We had a beer prior to dinner. I think we may have had three beers with dinner.
At dinner.
And I think we had, did we have another beer when we got back to the house after dinner?
I don't think so.
No. Then we hopped in an Uber and went over to Broken Goblet and just drank. And at some point, drunk Ron came out. And that was when Ron ceased being able to make good decisions as to when it would be a good time to stop drinking. Because okay. I feel we may have drank too much that night. I know the next
you
day
think?
We both felt like we wanted to die.
I woke up with my first headache. I woke up with my first drunk related headache in years.
Yeah.
On Friday. So we went. So there was a lot about, and I don't want to step on your toes.
No, not at all.
I fucking hate Billy right now. I fucking hate Billy.
Well, we got to put really. Billy asked, did drunk Ron spend $900? No, he did not. So that, at least we're not.
So. I don't want to step on your toes because it's your beef. It's your story.
I thought
this
would be a good segue into our Thursday evening.
Sure. So the issue that I think was, I feel like it was fate. It was inevitable. There was nothing that we were going to do to prevent the tsunami of drunkenness that was going to fall upon us. When you purchase tickets to the late show that a comedian was putting on at a brewery, which you and I both absolutely adore. By the way, if anybody gets the opportunity to visit Broken Goblet Brewing in
Bensalem, Pennsylvania,
please do so. Classy operation, start to finish. They know how to do beer. The fact
also,
that
you mentioned the comedian whose shtick is really all about drinking, food and drink,
right?
And will encourage the crowd to drink with him at times.
Do you think we should steal that shtick in our show?
I mean, let's work on it. I don't see why not.
2022 goals, hashtag. So the fact that we knew that the show we were going to see did not start until 10 o'clock on a Thursday night. You knew that this was not going to be good.
Everything was set up for it to really go downhill in a quick way.
So we started drinking at about 4:30.
That would be a safe bet. Yeah.
Was when we cracked open our first beer in the backyard of Casa de Ron and his wife, which, if I'm not correct, we will be discussing later on the show, how people will have the opportunity to visit the backyard of the Casa de Ron and his wife. But we'll put a pin in that. So we started off drinking early. We went for dinner. We had some food. What we went to a Mexican restaurant. Fine. Mm-hmm. Perfectly fine restaurant. Had a solid 3-4 beers.
Yes. Solid.
Then, and this was the key. This was when, this was key. Your wife bailed.
She did. She,
when your wife,
like that 10:30 start time, especially since she did not take off the day from work the next day. No, she was like, I'm not going to be party to this. I like how she made it like a sacrifice. Oh, you guys, you have a boys' night out. Sure. I don't want to bring you guys down. Okay, fine. So she bails. We hop in the Uber. Best decision of the night, by the way, hopping in the Uber.
Don't drink and drive, people.
Otherwise, my car would probably still be out in Bensalem.
This is the problem. Once we got to Broken Goblet, it wasn't jam-packed. I would say that it was maybe 50 or so people were there for the comedy show.
Right.
So the problem was the fact that there was not a line to be served beer. Unlike Vintage Shopping in the West Village, where there is a line, at the Broken Goblet on a Thursday night, there is no line for beer. They have so many delicious beers. This is not a sponsored comment. Broken Goblet, come at me if you feel it. I'm besmirching your enterprise. But they had so many tasty beverages. I think we had about 5 or 6 beers.
And the other thing they do too, which is very convenient but also conducive to drinking a lot, is the tab system is connected at all of the bars in there. So they've got like 4 or 5 different bars. But once you give them a credit card at one of your bars, you can go to any of them. And as long as you provide the name on the tab, they can pull it up. So
sure,
if there was a line at one bar, all you need to do is just go to the other bar and just grab a drink. So yeah, we had 5 or 6 beers.
Hold on a second. I'm looking up something right now. For whatever reason, they have not updated the charge on my credit card. I still have a hold of $12 from Broken Goblet, which isn't right.
Hopefully they take care of that. Jesus Christ. It was more than that.
My credit card bill is $7,000.
Well, you also bought some t-shirts too.
No, Ron, I haven't even paid for my medical surgery yet.
Oof.
Oh, I need to get out. There is absolutely no reason I am looking at this right now. Wow. Can you see the sweat right now that literally broke out right here? $7,000. So the point is
I really need to point out the comments being made about my wife. First, she didn't even last 4 innings. Nice throwback to the Phillies game back in May. And Janelle with Ron, your wife likes bailing on things, huh? Yes, well deserved. So just want to point those out because I appreciate those.
Yes,
so that was the other thing.
For the new listeners, that are questioning these references, earlier this summer, I went down to Philly to go watch a baseball game with Ron and his wife. And after 4 innings, that saint of a woman, the woman that I would thruple with, announced that she was done and wanted to leave after 4 innings. But getting back to Thursday.
Let's talk merch real quick because, you know, Zane had his merch table set up. And at the beginning of the evening, we went over to the merch table and we looked at the t-shirts. It was really just two t-shirts, one with like yellow lettering and the other with gray. Sure. We looked at them and we were like, we can live without these t-shirts.
Sure.
It's a bit much.
$30 for a t-shirt? No, that's outrageous.
But at the end of the night, we had to have these t-shirts. And so
do
now
you have the photo? Do you have the photo we took with him?
I can work on
I will talk if you pull that up, because I think it's a classic photo. Because what I really think is great about this photo is that I have barely a memory of the photo being taken.
I mean, that is good.
So this is the issue, is the fact that not only did we buy tickets for the late show. So there was an early show at 7, there was a late show at 10. But Ron bought the VIP access for the late show, so that we were able to get into the event space an hour before the people who were non-VIPs, because let's face it, Ron, you and I are VIPs.
That's the way we like to be treated.
We are VIPs forever.
Anywho, so we get into the brewery. So we just start hitting beers. There's nothing to do. They let us in for about a half an hour before Zane goes on stage. And then he starts telling stories just for the VIP. So like it's maybe a third of the room. So it's very intimate. He's, you know, we're asking questions that, you know, that he's not opening up to everybody. And during it, he's just like, got to take a drink, got to take a third of your drink, got to take half of your drink. So we're pounding him down. So by the time he went on stage to start, and he's got a very great, Ron, you know the history of Zane, Zane yes. Lamprey, the name. You can tell the story a little bit better about who he is. But the thing that's great is that he did a travel-related drinking show. So he's got these amazing travel stories from his days of doing his TV show. So his comedy show is really just, you know, just telling maybe 10 of these stories that he has, but he tells them in such a comedic, funny way that you're enjoying yourself the whole show.
Yeah, I mean, he's been around the world. His shows have always centered around food yes. and drink. And yeah, I mean, he's lived a life that I think many of us would be envious of living. And yeah, so we went to the merch table. We bought some shirts. We were like, oh, let's get a photo. He's like, oh, I'll take the photos. And then
because he can see,
I have like 100 variations of this photo on my phone right now.
And you can see, I'm going to tell you this. I was sleeping halfway through his show. I just put my head down and fell asleep. Ron says that I woke up to a startled kind of what was the noise?
You're not doing it justice. So I am sitting there and I can't, Alec, I'm trying to focus on the stage because you see and listen to the stories. And all of a sudden I hear this from alongside me. And then I see, and so like the people around us are like looking back, like, what was that noise? Like you clearly woke yourself up.
That was Secretariat. that was either Secretariat winning the Belmont or it was me coming out of my sleep. My problem was that halfway through his set, I started to see two Zane Lampreys on the stage. Now, what I noticed was if I closed my left eye, I saw a very focused version of him. If I closed my right eye, it was a blurry version of him. So I started to close my left eye so I could see him clearly because seeing two different Zane Lampreys was disorienting. But if I closed one eye, I could see him better. But then suddenly I didn't realize, and this was the problem, is that now I'm half sleeping. I've got one eye closed. So it was only a matter of time before this one started to come out cold. I think I was good for about 10, 15 minutes out of that set. Suddenly come to... powered through the rest of the show. And I will say this, very funny show, but when I woke up on Friday morning, wow, was I in bad shape. My head, only on this side, was just pounding.
And I said to you, as we were getting ready to crash for the night, I was like, Brian, Can I give you some Advil to take before you go to sleep? And you were like, nope, I'm going to be fine.
Oh, you did offer me Advil at night?
I did, yes. I would not. Listen, I pounded a couple before bed, and I pounded some at like 4 in the morning when I woke up.
I thought you offered me some in the morning, too.
I did, too, as well.
Fuck. I really fucked up. I fucked up bad Thursday night. It was dangerous. Had we gone to the early show, I feel like we would have behaved.
Probably because we would have been there for a couple hours because we were there like they were gonna they said they're gonna kick everybody out at like 11:30 but it was like we didn't get home till after 1 a.m. so I'm still unless the Uber driver took us somewhere and had his way with us, which is I guess at that point could have been a possibility.
I did have some rectal bleeding to report Friday afternoon. I don't know whether it was related or anything. We got home that late.
Oh yeah it was a long night. But kudos to the Uber driver for dealing with our drunk asses and getting us home.
But I don't think we were bad on the way home.
I don't know. I think we both fell asleep on the Uber ride home.
Sure. Maybe that's when he had his way with us. Next but week. Really, truly a very fun time. My only concern Oh, another good Billy comment. My only concern was the fact that it was the Thursday night and we still had Friday to power through. Right. My Friday, and we'll talk about this in a second. My Friday, I woke up in suburban Philadelphia and had to figure out a way to get into suburban New Jersey because I was going over to meet up with a friend of mine who was having a 50th birthday party for some friends of his, where we were going to see The Many Saints of Newark in a movie theater. That's right. I revisited the Sopranos story of the Sopranos family. Like, is that what was the name of the crew? I guess
that's kind of what it was for.
I don't know. Ron, you saw The Many Saints of Newark, correct?
I did.
We have not spoken about it until right now. We have not
spoken about it as of this point. Let me preface this by saying that I did not watch The Sopranos. I vaguely know the characters and the storyline, but that is not a show that I used to watch. Are you leaving in disgust now?
You son of a bitch.
I have thoroughly disgusted Brian up to this point. And I think, you know, but again, I think it's important because, you know, I think now I know how you feel watching a Marvel movie.
Okay, let's talk about this. You were alive in America during
I did not have HBO. That was what it was. I did not have HBO back then.
Wow. But you have it now.
I have it now, but I have not watched The Sopranos.
Okay, now my question to you is this. Having watched The Many Saints of Newark, do you have any interest, more or less or zero, same, to go back and watch The Sopranos?
I would say my interest would probably be the same, but I think you would get more enjoyment out of this movie by having had watched The Sopranos, by knowing the characters, relating to the characters, because otherwise there was a lot of it that just didn't make any sense to me. It just really got around, and yeah, it was very disjointed.
It's not a very good movie to begin with.
Right.
Then, if you also put on top of that the layer of the fact that they try to tell too many stories at the same time.
Yes.
There is the story of the racial riots going on in Newark during the 60s.
Sounds about right.
Okay.
Maybe 70s.
Then you've got the story of Dickie Moltisanti, who is one of the rising stars in a mob family, mixed with the story of an African-American male in Newark who is working for him, while also incorporating the story of the crew that Moltisanti was running with and the different power dynamics with the characters while they were working in the characters from The Sopranos so that we could all sit there and be like, oh, yes, that's so-and-so from the show, and yes, that's so-and-so from the show. And as Billy just commented, they brought in Ray Liotta, and this was the thing that just truly disturbed me. They brought him into the movie to play the mob boss. And spoiler alert. If you don't want to the spoiler alert, because fuck it, I don't give a shit. Fast forward about 7.5 minutes from now. So they bring in Ray Liotta. He is the head of the mob family who is killed. Then 3 minutes later, they bring Ray Liotta back as this guy's brother who's in jail. There was no need to keep Ray Liotta as the same as an active character. They could have hired any other actor in Hollywood and asked that man to play a member of the mob family who's doing time in prison.
If you want to make a mob movie, Ray Liotta needs to be a part of it.
So he was a part of it.
And they probably said, you know what? Fuck it. We're just going to put him into two different roles and see if anyone says anything. Like,
there was no need for it.
Even if they had said, like, yeah, I went to go see Hollywood Dick's twin brother. All right, that would have made sense to me. But, like, literally, Dickie just goes to prison, and then Ray Liotta just sits back down. And I will admit, by this point, I was not paying as close attention to the movie as probably I should have. Sure. And I was like, wait a minute. Wasn't really Ray Liotta just playing another part like 5 minutes ago?
Well, it was the weirdest thing because like there's one scene where like the guy dies, where Ray Liotta dies. Very violent death. And then literally four scenes later, somebody goes to prison and Ray Liotta walks out without them explaining that he exists.
Right.
So you're immediately sitting there like, is this a ghost? Is this like an apparition of some sort? Is this like a memory? Like, is this a, what do they call that? Where it's a back, flashback. So like, they didn't explain it in advance. So it's not a great movie. The trick here is the fact that for the fans of The Sopranos, this is a prequel. So that this is a story probably about 30 years before when The Sopranos really kicks off. So it was very nice to see some of the older characters from the TV show back in time when they were coming up. I enjoyed it. I really liked that aspect of it. It's not a very good movie. Standalone, like, which I find it interesting, your take on it as somebody who has not watched The Sopranos, is I would imagine that it would literally would probably is just a shit movie.
Oh, yeah. No, it if you have not watched The Sopranos, hands down, this was a horrible movie.
That's like me watching WandaVision.
Exactly. That's why I made the allegory. I now understand what it's like.
That's why I said it, Ron, because I know you had just said it.
Oh, my friend. But yeah, I was just that was pretty wild in my opinion.
And
I enjoyed it, but only because I had so much, and I've watched The Sopranos several times, probably about four times from start to finish. Let alone episodes here, there. But I've probably watched it in its entirety run four times. I love the show. So for me, it was just the ability to go back and just see some of these characters, which struck a chord with me. I saw it in a movie theater with friends. A lot of these people I have not seen in a very long time, which also made the experience that much more fun to me.
Do you think James Gandolfini's son will act in any other movies ever again?
I really hope not. He's not a very good actor. No. I think he's got a weird voice where it's like, hey, what do you think we're doing here? What's going on here? Hey, terrible actor.
But there was, let's not single him out because I feel there was a ton of horrible acting in that movie. I think you had people doing their interpretations of the characters that existed in The Sopranos back in the TV show. Like, what the hell was up with the actor that was supposed to be Steven Van Zandt?
Oh, he was just literally doing a Steven Van Zandt as Silvio interpretation.
But not even a good one.
But no. But that was what he was supposed to be doing.
No, I get that. That's the only reason I knew who he was. Well, let's
sure. Put
it, if it weren't for the hair, I don't think you would have had any idea who he was supposed to be. And he's walking around like this the whole time. Like, yeah. You really see a chiropractor about that.
There was one scene. There was like, I would say it was about maybe 45 minutes into the movie where somebody was referred to as Paulie.
Yeah.
And it was at that moment that I realized he was supposed to be Paulie Galtieri. From the TV, I had no idea who this character was supposed to be. Like 40 minutes into the movie, there for me.
Don't do it.
At one point, there's one scene where Dickie Moltisanti's talking to I think his wife or his girlfriend, whatever, and she says something to him, and he looks at her and he goes, "Oh," which literally reminded me of Dice doing his bits in the mid 80s. Where he was just like kind of like mocking the whole, like Italian movie culture. Like it was as base as you could get in that whole trope. Did I say trope?
Ooh. You said trope.
But it was just, I think Janelle did not like the actor that was playing Pauly.
Word on the street is, yeah.
Yeah, word on the street, Janelle did not like the actor that was playing Pauly. The point is just the fact that, like, I enjoyed it only because I have so much invested in The Sopranos that it was nice to see just the same story told from a different time frame, a different angle. Without that level of attachment, I don't think that somebody would enjoy it.
All right. Well, Brian, this may be a record. We have gone 45 minutes into the episode without having a COVID story.
Which hold on. We're not done yet.
No.
Hold on. I finished Squid Game.
Oh, Squid Game. And what did you think of the final episode?
Such a disappointment. Absolutely fucking hated the last episode.
Yep.
Are we doing spoiler alert now or no?
We can spoiler alert if you have not seen the final episode of Squid Game. Jump ahead like four.
Two and a half.
38.
Four? Okay, we'll give 4 minutes. Okay, I just thought it was a total cop-out that they brought back the idea of who the puppet, who they felt the need to explain who the puppet master was. They didn't, I don't think they adequately or they explained why these games were taking place. I don't think that it added, I feel like it detracted from the overall story. I think that story would have been better had they just ended it with the guy winning and just showing the trauma that he had to carry with him,
right,
having won it. They should have ended it right there.
Like they
nothing really after
felt like this, the need to put something into that final episode to set it up for a potential season two.
But you know what? Season two, I actually found was the idea of the way they ended it was even more insulting.
Yeah.
Because the idea that he couldn't get on the plane and walk away, but somehow turned like he turned around to because the pull of competing again was he gonna, did he think he was going to be able to go back and stop it? Was he gonna,
I don't know. What didn't make sense to me is he literally does Squid Game because because his love of his daughter and him wanting to be able to provide for his daughter.
Sure.
And then at the end of the season, when he is ready to get on a plane to see his daughter, he turns around and walks away.
Yes.
I think the first 8 episodes. Episode 6, genius, with the marble game.
Which one was 6?
The marble game.
Oh, the marble game.
Episode 6 might go up in one of the best episodes of a TV series that you will
see.
Because it is completely unexpected. It is, again, the entire series, it's very original. It's very well done.
Sure.
But it just really, that last half hour of the final episode, just really kills it.
The whole fact when they bring back the old man. Just absolutely. It was unnecessary. It didn't add to the story in any way.
Right.
All right. We are done. No more spoiler alerts. The only spoiler alert that we really have is that coronavirus is still going on.
Correct.
We're at the 48-minute mark.
TV-wise, though, I finished Midnight Mass on Netflix.
Do you recommend it?
I do recommend it. It is,
but I do not hear an enthusiastic recommend.
Well, here's the thing. It is very well done. It is dark. Like it is.
Ooh.
It is dark. Like the ending of it. I mean, it's a very good ending. They don't shortchange the ending, but it is a bleak, dark series that like you watch it and like, normally you want to see some redemption at the end of a season.
Sure.
You do not get that. You do not get any type of happy ending. So if you like
then the horror, you know, I've never had a happy ending.
With
I've never
a had very dark ending. Finish. I recommend it. Again, I watched that final episode and you just watch it. And you're just like, because you're like, you don't see a lot of it coming. So I would
walk me through the plot again.
So the plot is, it is this this island, this fishing island up in New England, and a priest comes to the island to take over for an older priest and miracles start to happen, and there's a lot of supernatural stuff. So it's very interesting. I don't want to say too much because there's not a lot I can say that doesn't ruin the story, but it is dark. That. It is just real dark.
I feel like I am always going to be one TV show behind you.
Very possibly.
Like, you come on this show, you recommend something, and I want to talk about it the following week.
You know what's dark, Brian? Is
hold on. Chocolate pudding.
That too. Jeffrey Burnham, and let's see if we can get his photo up on the screen here real quick.
Jeffrey, talk to me.
Is from Maryland.
Oh, hold on. Oh, I remember this guy. This guy stormed the Capitol on January 6th.
Shockingly, he did not. He is charged now in the deaths of his brother, his sister-in-law, and another woman. And apparently, as the story goes, is that he may have killed his brother, who was a pharmacist, because the brother was administering COVID-19 vaccines. Jeffrey Burnham apparently wanted to confront his brother with the government poisoning people with COVID vaccines. He repeatedly stated, "Brian knows something." Burnham's mother told detectives he planned to confront his brother and then killed his brother, brother's wife, and then another woman identified as 83-year-old Rebecca Reynolds. He has been charged with two counts each of first and second degree murder, as well as weapons charges, and will eventually be charged in the death of Reynolds, who was a friend of his mother's.
That's so fucking sad if that's true.
Yeah, very, very sad story.
Wow.
That's our.
Really hope that's not true.
We will keep an eye on it and see what happens. But on the COVID side, Brian, we will be able to celebrate the holidays after it seemed like.
Thank you, Fauci.
Dr. Fauci was saying that we shouldn't spend Christmas together. He turned around. He's like, no, I am going to celebrate Christmas with my family. I recommend everybody else does. And it was just announced earlier today that kids can go trick-or-treating this year for Halloween. Just making sure obvious precautions are taken for that.
Now, speaking of Halloween, Ron, how will you be celebrating Halloween?
Well, Halloween is my wedding anniversary. This will be 8 years that the wife and I will be married. And as such, we will be making some tweaks to the podcast schedule for Halloween night. But we need to finalize some of these time changes, and we will get that out to everybody.
So we will be doing a show on Halloween. We will be doing a Patreon on Halloween. We will be doing our monthly pajama party Patreon for our Patreon subscribers. It will probably be at a different time than we normally schedule. I have yet to finalize the Can You Beat Ron game for October. It will definitely be horror themed. Still tweaking those, but we will be doing it. We are going to be making some changes for Halloween Day. Speaking of Halloween, Ron, you have a piece of homework for you.
I do.
You have to go see the new Halloween Kills movie.
Oh, without a doubt.
I'm going with Dom on Thursday of this week, the 14th.
The invite.
You're not coming up to Queens to go see a fucking movie. but you have to go see the Halloween Kills movie. That comes out. The official date is this Friday, but it will be out in select theaters this Thursday night. Dom and I have already purchased tickets. We are definitely going. I will be taking a blue chew before walking into the theater just so I can maintain an erection for the entire hour and 48 minutes. It's going to be splendid. It's going to be a meet.
Very much looking forward to it.
Should be good. Right. What else? Oh, we have NFL locks of the week.
Do we? Do you want to do that, or do you want to do dead anti-vaxxer of the week?
Hold on a second. Shame on me. We need to do Dead Anti-Vaxxer of the Week.
All right.
Dead Anti-Vaxxer of the Week.
Well, before we get into our candidates for Dead Anti-Vaxxer of the Week, we do have kind of, a special person that we want to point out. This is Patrick Hampton, seen in this photo with the Mr. Pillow guy. Was that Mike Lindell?
Is he Mike Lindell?
Mike Lindell.
He's a patriot. He is a patriot, Ron.
Well, not only is he a patriot, but Patrick Hampton considers himself a patriot. He is a columnist for the Patriot Post. And what he did was he took his brother Marlon Hampton out of the hospital on October 4th because they would not treat his brother with ivermectin and vitamins. And then 2 days later, Marlon subsequently passed away at home. So unfortunately, Marlon does not qualify for Dead Anti-Vaxxer of the Week, but I do believe that Patrick qualifies for Shittiest Brother of the Week.
Yeah.
But Brian, yeah, do you have in your choice for Dead Anti-Vaxxer of the Week?
Ron, if you could go through your server, the official Ron and Brian podcast server, and pull up a photo, I believe you have it up right now, of Andrew Caddis from Boise, Idaho. Please don't focus on his wife. I know it's going to be hard. I know it's going to be difficult, but look in the right hand of that photo, not the left. It's difficult. His wife, Corinne, drawing attention in that photo. But let's talk about Andrew Caddis. Andrew was a beloved husband, a son, a father, a grandfather, and a friend to many. He was strong. He was loving. He was caring, knowledgeable. He was a lot of fun. He leaves his wife, Corinne McGee Caddis. He leaves his parents, John G. and Carol B. Caddis. He leaves his daughter, Ashley Caddis Kelsch. He leaves five precious grandchildren. He leaves his sister, Elizabeth. He leaves his brother, James. Three nephews, one niece, and many cousins. Andrew graduated from Brighton High School. He was master counselor of the R.W. Moore Order of the DeMolay International. He attended DeBry Institute in Arizona. He was a voluntary ski patrol in Idaho. He was, in many ways, a great American. But that's not all that Andrew was. He was also a fucking anti-vaxxer and a QAnon fanatic. He tweeted consistently about how if there was a way to fight to the death to defend the Republic, he was going to participate in it. And he did. He posted about how he posted about fake information, promoting it on his Facebook page, about how coroners were faking death rates. He posted about doctors that were taking flu patients and pressing them as COVID patients. He spread false information. He posted lies. He posted tropes that did not help the matter, that were false information. And ultimately, Andrew Caddis died earlier this month, excuse me, late last month, September 29th, of COVID-19. Andrew, I wish you were still here. I wish you were still here for your family, your wife, your children, your grandchildren, your nieces and your nephew. It sounds like you had a lot to offer this country, to your community and whatnot. And I am sorry that you rejected the COVID vaccine. I'm sorry that you rejected science and believe that you could do it on your own. Unfortunately, you are no longer with us. Andrew, I am sorry.
I think his wife may have been suffering from Chompers 19, because those are some teeth. Anyway, Brian, I hate to, again, try to outdo you, but I my friend. I bring you the story of a gentleman by the name of Jerry Parr. Jerry was a pastor in Tennessee, in Powell, Tennessee. He was a pastor at New Life Baptist Church. He was a solid right wing, solid anti-vaxxer. Even after his cousin passed away from COVID, I believe it was his cousin. Yes, his cousin Ann Mathis passed away in early August from COVID-19. She suffered from the same comorbidity that he did. They both had pulmonary fibrosis, but even her passing away from the COVID in early August was not enough to keep him from reposting right-wing memes and anti-vax sentiments. And then shockingly, on September 10th, started to come down with the symptoms of COVID. But despite coming down with the symptoms, decided he was not going to go to the doctors. He was not going to go to the hospital. He was not going to give in to the mania and the fear and anything else. Well, eventually, he did need to go in late September because he needed to be put on a ventilator to be kept alive. But that only lasted until October 4th. When he did succumb to COVID-19.
Fucking sad.
So those, my friends, those are our dead anti-vaxxers of the week.
Dead anti-vaxxer of the week.
Well, Brian, we would be remiss to get out of here if we did not give people our NFL locks of the week. If I may give you some kudos, perfect. Well, trailing perfect. We're still waiting on the late game, but you looked at Pittsburgh as a 2-point underdog against Denver. You're like, you know what? I think this is the week that Pittsburgh steps it up. Sure enough, Pittsburgh beats Denver 27-19. And we all know the daring pick that you made for the Sunday night game. And that is looking good so far. So I feel pretty confident in your ability to be perfect this week as well.
Ron, I appreciate your optimism. I appreciate your confidence. But the only, but it makes me feel slightly nervous because you, my friend, have already proven your ability to slide through week five of the NFL season, going 2-0, Carolina -4 over the Eagles. I feel like this was slightly a cheat on your part. You live in Philadelphia, so you are more familiar with the strength of the Philadelphia Eagles. You knew that getting 4 points was a joke. You knew that they were going to win the game outright. Eagles winning 21-18. Ron, that put you up 1-0. Going into the late games when the Cowboys -8 over the Giants, this was a no-brainer. Cowboys winning easily 44-20. Once again, for week five, you are now 5 weeks in a row with 2-0. Ron, when you say it is a lock of the week, you may as well put your paycheck on it. Ron, congratulations. How do you do it?
You know what? I just see them in my head. I envision them. I send it out into the universe, and I make it happen.
Excellent. What do you got for week six?
All right, for this upcoming week six, I've got two road favorites that I like. We've got Miami going into Jacksonville. They are favored by 3 points. Take Dolphins given the 3. And then Tampa Bay rolls into Philadelphia. The Eagles were good for me this weekend, but I feel they're not quite good enough for Tom Terrific. Take Tampa Bay -6.5. Brian, who are your locks of the week?
I've got the Bengals -3.5 over the Lions. Detroit is terrible. Cowboys -1 over the Patriots. Cowboys are a shockingly surprising team this year, and I think they continue their efforts this week.
All right, very good. What else is going to be surprisingly good is Dave Hill live in my backyard. Yes. Here in Elkins Park, Pennsylvania, on Friday, October 22nd. We are very close to sold out for this event. Tickets, in fact, are sold out. online. We do have a few choice seats left, but you just need to message us via one of our social media platforms, which obviously, you know, you can find at ronandbrianpodcast.com, but just reach out to us via Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter to secure one of these final tickets. $20 a person. This again is a vaccinated only show. We will be wristbanding based on the vaccine that you have received. We are enjoying that tiered thinking. We are vaccine snobs and we are not afraid to say it. But also you can go to ronandbrianpodcast.com for our web store, a lot of great merch, but more importantly, a link to our Patreon in the upper right-hand corner. Click on Become a Patron. Go to our Patreon at the bronze level or higher, $10 or more. You get access to Ron and Brian After Dark, which will be taking place at 9:30 tonight, just 25 minutes from now. I just finished an 8.5% beer. I'm feeling sassy. So you folks that have been with After Dark for a while know what that means. It's going to be a fun night.
Yes.
Brian, any other stories that we should cover before we get out of here, or have we done?
Anything we didn't get to is sliding into the Patreon. I'm going to be talking about the first time that I sucked on toes. It's going to be a great Patreon.
All right. Well, we are looking forward to it. Again, just 24 minutes away now from a fun After Dark. So we are going to close up shop here. We appreciate everyone that has joined us on the live podcast. We appreciate all of you that download and listen during the week. You Patreon folks, we appreciate you. Yeah, just a little bit more because you're
significantly more. We appreciate you significantly more.
I'm trying not to, you know, try and not make the cheap people feel too bad.
No, I want to make the cheap. If you are freeloading with, this is episode 176 of the podcast. We've been doing this for over 3 years, people. Yep. If you have accepted the entertainment that we have provided and not felt the need under any circumstances to help support this show monetarily, then I will shame you, because the people who have sat there and said, I have a dollar, take a third of it, because I want you to be able to offset the cost of the show, because this show is so amazing. It is so important to me. Those are the people that mean so much to me. So if you want to curry favor with me, join the Patreon. Link is below. Go to our website. Click the link in the upper right-hand corner. Join the Patreon. We have 175 episodes. There is so much content out there. So many personal stories, sexy stories, spicy stories, embarrassing stories. I told the first story of when I got knifed in the back. That's Patreon.
That's good stuff.
It's not for everyone.
Nope, not for everyone. But it could be for you.
Told the story of, yes. You all liked right. It. We've got it. It's behind the paywall. Join it. Click the link below. Cough up a couple bucks per month. Help us out.
Sounds good. If not, we will see all of you again next week. Patreon folks, we will see you in about 20-some minutes. Brian, anything else before we roll on out of here?
I love you, Ron.
Love you too, my friend. We will catch you next week.
Thank you for joining us on the Ron and Brian podcast. We're live each week on YouTube, Facebook, and Twitch. You can find prior episodes, links to our social media, and everything else Ron and Brian at ronandbrianpodcast.com. See you again next week.